Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen joins us today. The council has held hearings recently related to police accountability, and last night the council president announced that he'll hold a hearing to discuss the city's crisis response system. That hearing is scheduled for the 27th of August, and Council President Cohen joins me here in Studio A. It's good to see you. So what are we going to be talking about on the 27th of August? This is a committee of the whole, so you're going to have the entire council come and weigh in on crisis response.
Yeah, so look, this is an issue that is very personally important to me as well as to many, many, many Baltimoreans, and that is the issue of our crisis response systems. A few weeks ago, we had three really unfortunate deaths, all of which seemed to have stemmed from behavioral health crises and ended with someone dead and a police officer as part of the response. But from my vantage, not enough support from the other partners that are supposed to be out there responding when someone is having a mental or behavioral health crisis. And while I can't get into details of any of those cases because they're being investigated by the AG, what I will say is that Baltimoreans deserve to know that when their family or their neighbor is experiencing a behavioral or mental health crisis, that by dialing 988 or 911, that we have the right folks that can deploy and come support them. And in some cases, that is a co-responder, an officer, and a social worker. In some cases, if there's no threat of violence, that may just be social workers or community responders. But this is a system that we have built. The council in 2022 made a big push to fund it through Baltimore Crisis Response. We got $1.5 million that Mayor Scott put toward these responders. This has been recognized as best in class by the Maryland Association of Counties. And I think what we've seen, unfortunately, Tom, is that some of these systems have atrophied. And it is the council's obligation to hold every party accountable, not to point fingers at one agency or another, but to say this is a systems issue. And as a system, all of our nonprofit partners like BHSB, Baltimore Crisis Response, the police department, the fire department, the health department, we all have to be at the table together to get this right, because I don't want to hear ever of a behavioral health crisis that did not have a proper response.
Is it a matter of money? I mean, there were pilot programs that were going to send social workers and, you know, non-sworn police officers to some of these events, usually with, you know, in conjunction with a law enforcement response. When those pilot programs ended, did the money end? I mean, where are we, in terms of the budget for these things? Because we do have reports, the Baltimore Sun reporting that some 50% fewer calls that involve mental health or behavioral health crises were answered by these mental health professionals this year from 2024 from 2023. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, so look, I do think that part of this is about funding. Funding is always going to be a challenge, and never more so now that the Congress has passed the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, where we're going to see a lot less folks on Medicaid able to get coverage. I know that one of the ways that we had been supporting these systems is through Medicaid and Medicare. And so I am very concerned about the money itself. However, what I would say, Tom, is that to me it's less about the dollars than it is about the systems themselves and making sure that we have the right partners in place to be able to immediately and effectively respond and deploy. And so, for example, when we hear about an elderly person who has a long history of mental health crises, what I want to understand and what I hope comes out of this hearing is, what is the proper response? Is it BPD and a social worker? Is it someone else? Now, it gets complicated when someone has a weapon, right? We always want safety first. And so we are crystal clear that if there is any threat of violence, that there needs to be law enforcement on the scene. But what we don't want is for someone to end up losing their life, whether that's at the hands of a police officer or self-harm or hurting someone else, when it could have been de-escalated and prevented. This is an issue, Tom, that you know is very personal to me.
Sure, you've been a big advocate for what we call trauma-informed care. You're talking about educating city employees in trauma-informed care. That, of course, includes the police. But as Commissioner Worley has made the point, police officers are police officers.
That's
They're not mental health professionals.
That's right. I want to remind your listeners that in 2020, Baltimore became the first city in the United States to pass legislation to implement trauma-informed care, just like you said, to train city government in understanding this disease that impacts so many of the people that live here. And I was proud to champion that legislation, and the Trauma-Informed Care Task Force was proud to push for funding for crisis response. Again, what I've seen in these past couple of years, especially post-COVID, as so much attention went toward the pandemic, is that some of the systems, particularly in our health department, have atrophied, and that I am very concerned, and I'm excited for our new health commissioner, and I know former commissioner, now deputy mayor, Letitia DeRosa, has come back to city government. What I've said to her, and what I will say to our new health commissioner as she goes through the confirmation process, is that behavioral health has to be a key component of what we do in the city of Baltimore. We have had amazing leadership in folks like Dr. Lena Wen, Sharfstein, Bielenson. We've just had incredible leadership. And I want to really thank Letitia DeRosa.
But we've been without a health commissioner
That's right.
now for more than a year.
That's right. And it really has been a gap. And I will say
we've had an acting health commissioner.
Correct. And again, thank you to Acting Commissioner Mary Beth Holler. But we do need someone who is going to put their arms around these systems. And again, Tom, it is about the person on the street. When you see that person and they are in crisis, we need to make sure that when you dial either 988 or 911, that the call the respondent is able to quickly deploy the correct team to be able to address the crisis. In many cases, that may involve law enforcement, but in some cases, it may not. And so we have to get that part right.
As you mentioned, there were three people involved in behavioral health crises that the police were involved in, and very tragically, all three died. Dante Maurice Melton, the woman I think you were referring to just a minute ago, Pratasha Clark Brooks, 70-year-old woman who was holding a knife when she encountered police, and then an Arab, or B.J. Abdullah. In the case of Ms. Brooks, for example, she's 70 years old. There had been some 20 prior calls. The police come and you know, have an interaction with her. But what does it tell you that, you know, 20 times this woman required help? What do we take from that?
One way or another.
You mentioned that, you know, the AG's office is investigating.
Correct.
Et cetera,
and Commissioner Worley, the police department's investigating. And so, again, I don't want to get in front of them. But what I will say is that this is a systems failure. She should not have lost her life in this incident. We knew that she had, as you said, a long history. They said 20 calls just that month for behavioral and mental health calls. I know that her son had been involved. And so, Tom, I see a failure all around here. Why was she in her home alone in that moment? I heard the conditions in her home were not good. Where was the medical care? Where were the responders that may have been able to de-escalate? I know one issue that has come up that I've talked to Commissioner Worley about is making sure that more of our officers are trained in crisis response, our police officers, so that they can de-escalate.
And again, that is actually part of the consent decree,
that's
for
right.
example, right?
Correct.
I mean, so there's no choice in this matter.
No, that's 100% right. And I think Judge Bredar has been really clear that we need to have the right response in any of these situations, and that officers need to be trained, they need to be trauma responsive, they need to be able to de-escalate a conflict, and what they call least amount of force that they're always seeking to not have it go to the gun. And unfortunately, in this case, again, the woman lost her life. And I want to be clear, Tom, that we have a lot of exceptional police officers in the city of Baltimore doing really, really hard work. And I do not put any of this just at their feet. I agree with Commissioner Worley that the approach we need to take and that the approach the entire city council will take on August 27th is to look at the entire system, each party. Why didn't someone else who wasn't just a police officer show up as part of that response? What changes when the person has a knife versus if they have a gun, if there's a threat of violence? That is what we seek to dig into, because I will just say, Tom, all of Baltimore mourned after these three loss of lives. I just heard overwhelming.
Yeah, there was a public hearing where, it was a very emotional event. Yeah, people talking about Mr. Melton and Mr. Abdullah, everybody. I mean, in Mr. Melton's case, there were 10 officers responding to that situation, and he was walking around in the street or running around in the street. I mean, there's all sorts of things that, again, the AG's report and the police department report will shed some light on. But
to me, just really quick on this, because I think it's important, is Baltimore has a history of being a leader in behavioral health, and that is where we need to get back to. Clearly, some systems have broken down. It is not acceptable to me to have these types of incidents happening. And it's not about pointing fingers. It's not about who's to blame, but it is about how do we fix it and make government work for the people that we respond to.
Zeke Cohen is the president of the Baltimore City Council. We'll have more with the council president after a quick break. And before we go to a break, this sad news about Brandi Collins Dexter, a gifted scholar and author who was a wonderful friend of our show. She lived here in Baltimore, and she worked with the Shorenstein Center at Harvard University studying race, media, and history. She appeared on Midday several times as a political commentator, and next week we're going to rebroadcast my interview with Brandi about her book, Black Skinhead, Reflections on Blackness and Our Political Future. Brandi Collins Dexter died of pancreatic cancer last month. She was 44 years old, and we will miss her. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, international students make up a significant portion of the student body of Maryland's colleges and universities. As new restrictions on visas for students from abroad increase, Maryland schools are struggling to support not only these scholars, but the programs that they're enrolled in. So we'll talk to a couple of reporters who are covering this story and several international students themselves trying to decide what to do next. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen. You are welcome to join us if you have a question or comment for the council president. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. So, Mr. Council President, I want to ask you about the opioid problem that persists here in the city. There's hundreds of millions of dollars, some $400 million, I think, at latest count, coming from drug companies that have been sued by the city. But boy, we had a terrible, terrible, two terrible, terrible incidences with evidently some very bad fentanyl on the street, and there were some 27 people a week and a half ago who fell victim to that, and then another five or so just a couple of days ago. What can you tell us about that? And the council has begun to hold hearings on the opioid crisis as well.
Yeah, we have. And I'm really grateful to Chairwoman Felicia Porter, who has been holding this hearing series specifically about the opioid crisis, really digging into what has gone on, what led to this, how we can use our settlement funds. She's doing a great job. And I know Chairman Mark Conway from the Public Safety Committee is also getting ready to hold a hearing looking at it from a public safety lens. Look, Tom, you know, you're absolutely right. It was incredibly disturbing to hear 27 folks in a what they call mass casualty event experienced what we believe to be a bad batch. It is not entirely clear yet what happened. I know there's multiple parties investigating it, but that is a lot of people. And then less than a week later, we had 7 folks in the same geographic area also overdose. 5 of them went to the hospital, 2 refused treatment. It's really concerning. And it is clear that there is something going on within the drugs that folks are using that is causing a lot of suffering and pain. And I'll just say, Tom, I was out there. Mayor Scott held his cabinet meeting out in Penn North. And I went out there with Councilman Torrance, whose district it is, and Chairwoman Felicia Porter and the city administrator. And, you know, I taught there about 20 years ago in Penn North. And in many ways, it looks very similar to when it did when I taught. And there is this raging drug market on Pennsylvania Avenue, and it is plain as day. And I remember as a teacher thinking to myself, man, what is it like to be a 12-year-old child walking through this every day just to get to school? Like, what message is being sent when your trip to school in the morning involves folks yelling and shouting out in the names of different drug products, and you see just the ravages of this disease and the very wrong way in which we treated it when we had our war on drugs, which we know resulted in mass incarceration. And so I think, Tom, the city is in this rare inflection moment where we finally have some real resources to be able to address this crisis. Again, a lot of credit to Ebony Thompson, the city solicitor, for aggressively suing the pharmaceutical companies. We were not happy with the latest ruling where a judge actually walked back what the jury had decided and took back over $260 million. But we know there's still an abatement coming in these trials, which will hopefully result in more money for the victims of overdose. So again, grateful to Mayor Scott, my colleagues on the council. This is not a problem that is going away anytime soon, but it is extremely urgent. And it's an all-in approach. We're looking at public health. We're looking at public safety. We are going to work with the communities that have been most impacted. There's an opioid restitution committee and a fund that's been set up. Not going to be easy, but the city is committed to using public health, public safety, and all the different lenses that we have to get to the bottom of this longstanding issue for our city.
And when it comes to how to spend the money that has been gleaned from these lawsuits, you've gotten some public feedback. There's more sessions planned to get more public feedback. What are you hearing so far? What are your own personal views about how this money should be spent the most efficient an effective way?
Yeah, look, I know there was some frustration among some of the folks who've been serving on the opioid restitution board that I think only about $2 million went to new nonprofits or to nonprofits that had not been named in the lawsuits that support harm reduction and that are out there doing the work. I want to be clear with folks that this is the first tranche of money. And the other thing that I want to say is, I think it is important that we, city government, get our house in order. As I said before in the first segment, I think that our health department has really atrophied when it comes to behavioral health and public health. And we've leaned very heavily on groups like BHSB, Behavioral Health Systems Baltimore. And I actually think that in some ways is to our own detriment. I think that we have an obligation and a responsibility as city government to have our own infrastructure to be able to support people dealing with this disease. And so I actually support the decision to have some of the money go toward city agencies to shore up the work that we're doing. because I think that supporting nonprofit partners, supporting all of the organizations in this space is really important. But if we don't have our own shop together, I think we can just throw money around and have it not be effective. And so I actually support that decision, but I've definitely heard some feedback and some concerns, frankly, about, you know, this first tranche of money.
Yeah, it is a public safety issue. It is a public health issue. I mean, back when Lena Wen was the health commissioner, and that was, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, she and I talked, and full disclosure, she's a regular guest on this program. We talk, we have a feature called The Health Watch, and we're delighted to have her talking about public health issues across the spectrum. But she identified this as a, you know, as a public safety issue and as a public health issue, both. Mark Conway, who heads the public safety committee, Councilman Mark Conway, has been calling for hearings. He and the mayor got in a little tiff about that.
Yeah.
You mentioned Councilwoman Porter has been taking up that mantle. You're going to be meeting later this afternoon with the public safety committee to talk about all these pipes that are blowing up and catching on fire or you know, having a water main breaks and stuff. So we've got infrastructure issues, which of course becomes a public safety thing too. If you happen to be parked or driving near a pipe that, you know, catches on fire.
That's right.
So there are, it has to be an the departments have to work in an interstitial way.
That's right. And today's hearing is going to be really interesting. It's in the Public Safety Committee at 1 o'clock. Grateful to Chair Conway for holding it. And it really is looking at the underground conduit fires and exploding pipes that we've seen. Like you said, Tom, we have some aging, old, falling apart infrastructure in the city of Baltimore. We are an old East Coast city. But part of what we want to do through this hearing is really get to the bottom of who is responsible, right? You have DOT, they have a conduit division, you have BG&E. At the end of the day, we need to make sure the maintenance is being done. I know that I've had some challenge with BG&E because they are their rates have gotten really high. They're doing a lot of infrastructure repairs on their pipes. And so when you see continued issues with pipes exploding, with underground explosions, you know, from a safety standpoint, I really worry. And I think part of the hearing today, we'll have BGE there, we'll have all the different city agencies, but what the council really wants to get to the bottom of is who is responsible for what? Because at the end of the day, Tom, our commitment is that government needs to work for the people we represent. And we actually have a hearing after that about permitting in the housing department today as well. And that's another one where you can't blame Donald Trump for our dysfunctional permitting system. That is solely and squarely within city government. We need to make it right. We need to get it right so that we can have the economic renaissance that we all deserve.
On Wednesday, tomorrow, the 23rd at 5:30 at Pimlico Elementary and Middle School on Pimlico Road here in Baltimore, there will be another meeting of the Opioid Restitution Advisory Board. And there's another one on Thursday, the 31st, on the east side at Henderson Hopkins Elementary Middle School. That starts at 5:30 as well. And when it comes to something like the health department, I know Lena Wen has told me for years now, when she appeared on the program as the health commissioner, that a huge part of their budget is grants.
Right.
It's not like they're a line item in the city. You know, they get grants. And of course, the climate for grant getting right now couldn't be worse.
Yeah, particularly for a city that still believes in equity as one of our core driving missions. No, you're absolutely right. It's something that I've brought up, and I know my colleagues have brought up a lot during budget hearings, is the amount of federal funds and then state pass-through funds that support a lot of our health programming makes it complicated and makes it somewhat convoluted in terms of who is paying for what. And as you know, Tom, we've had some procurement challenges within that department as well. We just had an audit at the Board of Estimates about that. But again, at the end of the day, we, the city government, have a responsibility to the people that live here to make sure we are a best of class public health department, because Baltimore's a health town, right? I mean, you've got some of the best hospitals in the world.
Really good hospitals. It's a good place to get sick.
Well, hopefully not, but yeah, we got the right partners, and I want to see us do the next step. And I also, again, want to credit Mayor Scott, because he's someone who has taken a public health approach to violence. And you can quibble with this or that, but look, at the end of the day, the numbers are what they are, and we're seeing historic declines in homicide. And so I think this approach where we balance safety and health, and we work closely with our AG and our state's attorney Bates and all of our partners in and out of government, that is the right approach. It's all in. It's comprehensive. That's what we need to bring to bear. And we really got to solve, just I'll say, on this conduit issue and on the permitting issue, to me, this is about getting into the nitty gritty. This is about systems need to work for the people that they serve. And it's not particularly sexy, but it is important. If we're going to rehab 5,000 or 12,000 vacant homes, if you can't pull a permit in a reasonable amount of time,
right,
it ain't going to work.
Yeah. Let me ask you about a couple of other things, and then we'll certainly follow up in your subsequent appearances when it comes to the permitting process and the infrastructure. But one of the issues that you've attached yourself to very vehemently is wage increases for solid waste workers.
Yeah.
You've been talking about this with Councilman Schleifer for about a year and a half now. Mayor Scott had pledged to raise the wages for solid waste workers, but now it turns out that there's about a $50 a week temporary stipend that has been added to the wages of some solid waste workers, but not all. What can you tell us about that? What kind of budget manipulation has to happen for those folks to get a raise? And do you think that realistically that will happen for them?
Well, it better happen, Tom, because this is something that Mayor Scott committed in his State of the City address. And I know that for Councilman Schleifer, for Councilman Glover, for Councilman Jones, for many of us on this city council, this is a top priority. We know we have had enormous challenges within the Department of Public Works, particularly in sanitation. I was sort of had mixed feelings about the decision to move Khalil Zaid out of there. He's now going to be deputy mayor.
He was the head of DPW.
Yeah,
he
was.
He seemed to be starting to turn things around.
I really think he was. I think he was dramatically improving the culture and the safety and the health of the workers, which we know had been so lacking for so very long. And so, again, it was sort of with mixed emotions to see him ascend to be deputy mayor.
So he will oversee DPW,
correct,
along with several
and
other agencies.
And several other agencies, which, again, he's done that before. And so it makes sense. And we're excited for Matt Garbark to come in as the permanent or the now acting, but if he gets confirmed, permanent DPW director.
And he'd be like the sixth DPW director in the last 9 years.
Yeah, he would.
There's a very revolving
door. A lot of turnover, yes. Yeah, and again, you know, Tom, we know that turnover hurts the effectiveness of an agency. But to your question, it is critically important. And I know that AFSCME has been in deep negotiations with the administration, but I will just say that sanitation workers getting a pay raise is a top priority for this city council. We went on a ride along. We did a whole shift working with the sanitation workers. I'll say to Baltimore, that is hard work. And you better thank the people that come and pick up your trash, because they are working extremely hard in extremely tough conditions. And we need to compensate them right.
Let me ask you one more question before we let you go, and that's about the city website.
Yeah.
Baltimore Brew had a story not too long ago about the costs for revising the website, now estimated to be about $3.9 million. That's a lot for a website. The original estimate was $800 million. It's taken a long, long time. You mentioned Dr. Giraza. This is a project that's being headed by Dr. Giraza's husband. How is it that a website costs $4 million, number one? And number two, why is it taking so long? And is this the kind of thing that the council has any say in and can do anything? And I'll certainly ask the mayor about it as well next time I see him.
Yeah, and so, you know, this original contract went out before I became council president, before I chaired the Board of Estimates. But what I've said to folks is, look, we want to see a good product. And $4 million, three point whatever, it is a lot of money that is being spent on this website. And so I have some questions in my capacity as chair of the Board of Estimates for BCIT. That is the part of city government that does
it's the technology
IT infrastructure, correct? Mm-hmm. About why is this taking so long and why are we spending so much money on it? If I'm just a regular person and I get a contract and then it gets extended out and I'm not seeing much product, I probably get fired from that. And so I do not know what happened here, but I will say that I absolutely have some questions for BCIT that I plan on asking the next time they're in front of the Board of Estimates.
Right. Evidently, I misspoke. It's 800,000 was the first estimate.
Not
8 million, excuse me. And now it's 3.9 million. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing that people say, well, you know, only a city government, only some sort of government agency would pay that much for a website.
Yeah, and look, we have a fiscal obligation to the taxpayers,
sure.
Right? I mean, this is, you know, your money and my money and everybody's money. And so, again, I know that the Inspector General put out a really sharp report on this. I'm looking forward to asking some questions at the Board of Estimates of BCIT about what has gone on and when are we getting our website.
Baltimore City Council President Zeke Cohen, we will see you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
And up next, Baltimore's universities and colleges aren't just institutions of learning. They're also big business. Dr. Richard Clinch joins us to discuss the economic footprint of local educational institutions and what is lost to the local economy when those institutions have to cut back. And before we go to a break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do this to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 80 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Naniato Alusi was killed the week before last. He was 27 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.